Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap for July 2016. I'm Nick, here alongside Chris. How's it going, man?
I'm Chris, alongside Nick. I'm going to be doing my own counter-hosting.
Okay.
To act as though I'm doing it as well on my end. Like a second podcast that only I'm able to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be like, Nick, why don't we get to some questions over here? And then, like, quietly under my breath, I'm going to be like, that's Nick, guys. He's a big, dumb idiot.
You're just actually going to very, very shoddily edit all of my parts out. Like, I'm Nick, and I'm a stupid head.
Oh, yeah. Someone's like, Nick, what's your thought on women in manga today? You're like, well, that's an interesting topic, and I
think that all have big boobs, but they should be bigger. Because I'm pervert, Nick.
This is the sound of me farting.
What's the sound of one hand clapping? It's me farting.
Nick, you sound so uncouth.
And it's weird that like that, the least flattering part of that is just the voice, honestly.
The fact that it's not even like remotely attempts to sound like you.
This is the least dignified impersonation you can give to anyone.
Runner.
Like Plinkett, but without dignity.
Yeah.
We're just saying something.
It's just the saddest version of Plinkett. It's just like, fuck Star Wars, we all just eat pizza pirates all day long.
For those of you who are listening, you're going to be like, why is Nick sound a little bit nasally? I explained this before we went live on the stream. I am a little sick right now. I apologize. You may hear my sound just completely cut out for a bit as I pause to blow my nose or cough or do general cold person things that make noise. So that just kind of get that out of the way right there.
Yeah. Understandable. Nick might pause every so often to die, guys. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, but it's okay though. We're always dying. Anyway.
Yeah. Slowly.
Happy Thoughts Podcast. So, I believe that it is our tradition to start these episodes off with a question for each other.
Yes. I have one for you, Nick.
Okay, cool.
The new Ghostbusters movie, Nick, what say you? Are you in team Raped My Childhood, or are you team Everyone is Misogynist? And don't tell me you're one of those people in the middle ground who have decided to judge this movie based on its own merits and not make your decision of the movie and the people who like and or hate it based solely on the trailer.
So I have to choose.
You have to be team Raped My Childhood or team All Men Are Misogynists.
I didn't grow up with the Ghostbusters. I mean, I saw the movies, obviously, but they came out a few years before I was born.
Yeah. No, we were
at least the first one did. I don't remember when the second one came out.
I feel like the second one came out like 88, 89. It's like right around our time frame. Ghostbusters 2. No, not 2016. God damn it. Stop auto-completing. There was another Ghostbusters at 2.
Right. It was 1989. Yeah. So even if that came out when I was born, I would definitely be too young to remember it. So now, given the consequences of the two, one, a fictional media franchise being ruined forever, or an entire half of the world's population being hated, I'm going to hope that people's childhoods were ruined instead of that second one.
It's insane how much of a fight has been brought about this movie, considering very few people haven't even really seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of like a vitriolic fight it is from either side. And every time I keep hearing the argument, I'm just like, didn't we learn from Batman vs. Superman to just not make this decision on the movie before we see it? Because ultimately we might see it. I was like, well, that's disappointing. I hope we don't talk about this other than that weird jar of piss that fucking Holly Hunt turns around with like 2 minutes straight.
Put this Jolly Rancher in your mouth. Ooh, sticking it in there. Ooh, the red coats are coming. Also, there was the whole thing with the Star Wars, where as soon as that trailer came, I was like, the first person that they showed me was black. That means that J.J. Abrams is trying to make a statement,
Oh man, you had to imagine as people were furious when they got to the movie and they were like, oh fuck this black guy, that's nothing, there's a woman in the lead role. She's doing everything.
How dare she be here at all?
How dare this woman try to use the force? Everyone knows you command the force with your penis, that's why a lightsaber is shaped like a penis. J.J. Abrams ruined the lore.
That's why the tip of the lightsaber bulges out obscenely. I'm kind of torn on how I should answer that.
No, I want your legitimate thoughts on the Ghostbusters.
Between my childhood being ruined and all women everywhere being hated, Jesus Christ, I'm not sure which I want to be the reality.
Now, what do you honestly feel about the Ghostbusters movie? Are you excited to see it at all?
I'm not really excited to see it. I did see that trailer, and I know the process that led to its creation was very troubled. And that second one is a big warning sign. Seen the trailer so far, haven't really been impressed by them. Might see it, might not. I don't see a lot of movies in theaters anyway. And from what I've heard, it is okay. People who have seen the movie, the reviews that have come out, it is okay. It is not nearly as good as the original, which, you know, is to be expected from almost every remake that happens these days. I believe Film Brain's gotten to see it, and he basically said, it's alright. I'm willing to believe that, and so it's like, okay, whatever. By the way, the merits of a movie do not have anything to do with how many women are in it.
No, not in the least. And I like most of the women in it. I honestly don't know much about the two SNL actresses. I've heard good things about Kate McKinnon. I know she does like the Hillary Clinton on SNL right now, which I hear is very good. And I've heard some people like Leslie Jones. I just don't know much about them. But I really like Melissa McCarthy in the right roles, and I think Kristen Wiig's very good. So.
And whose idea was it to put a bunch of SNL castmates in a Ghostbusters movie? Yeah. What are you thinking?
Stupid.
The first one had no SNL castmates in it.
Have a black member who's just supposed to be the normal, everyday person. Why can't they be a scientist? Original Ghostbusters wouldn't have done that.
Apparently, like, a bunch of the stuff involving Winston in the original movies is actually, in, like, the original version of the script, is just not funny.
It's also kind of fucked up, too, because I think, this might be rumor, but I thought I heard that they originally wanted Eddie Murphy for the role, and when he turned it down, they're like, well, we just don't need this character very much anymore. And that's why Winston only shows up, like, halfway through the movie, and he's not given many, like, hilarious lines or anything like that.
And apparently, like, it was Dan Aykroyd's, like, original idea to have Winston also be super smart, but he just allowed things to be put into, you know, Star Trek-y metaphors.
Yeah.
Which I think ruins his character, by the way.
I never had an issue with, like, I mean, I definitely think it's an issue when you look at the fact that there are, like, no other movies where the inverse happens, but I always thought Winston was a fun enough character. I always liked him.
But he played a good straight man to, you know, the misogynist as hell Bill Murray. And the geeky as hell Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. So
he still has good lines, you remember? Someone tells you you're God, you say
yes. It's like that's like the first line from that movie I ever memorized, honestly. That's a great movie. The first one is a great movie, but it's not going to be ruined by... Even if 2016 Ghostbusters is literally the worst movie ever. Okay, go back and watch the original.
Yeah, what do you... I've never understood that argument of this thing came out, and now I'm pissed off, and it's ruined what I enjoyed before. I think the closest I ever came to that was after finishing Mass Effect 3, and being like, I was kind of disappointed in that. I didn't have as much of an urge to play the others, but even that kind of disappeared in time. Like, you'd still enjoy something.
At least that one was also a direct continuation and conclusion of the story.
That was the end of a trilogy, so it's meant to be enjoyed once.
You were disappointed in the ending of the story.
Yeah.
I remember when The Last Airbender came out, I was really pissed off. But what I did was I went out and bought the first season on DVD, and I watched it, and I was like, yes, this was good.
Yeah, there you go. That's the mature adult way to handle a situation.
Yes, buy an entire season of a cartoon for children and watch it in a marathon. My question for you is not nearly... It's probably not going to lead to nearly as big a tangent. we recently learned that Bleach is going to be ending soon.
Okay.
We don't know the exact timetable yet, but we also don't know the exact timetable for another series we know to be ending soon, Nisekoi. So my question was actually going to just be to get a prediction from you. Which of those two do you think is going to end first?
I think Bleach will end first, just because it has a definite conclusion date within, like, six? I think it's probably even less since we had it last week. 5 weeks, essentially, that it probably has about left. Whereas Nisekoi, because there's only so much room left, I think they could still technically stretch it out a little bit longer if they want. I think there's at least 4 to 5 chapters left in Nisekoi as it is naturally, and they could do some time to spread things out. I don't think they'd want two series to end at the exact same time.
So unless they do that all the time, though.
But long-running series?
I do think that is more an exception than the rule.
Yeah, I'd be surprised they both ended within, like, a week. But it's possible. I just think Nisekoi could probably go on, like, another month or two if it really wanted to, whereas I think Bleach hard cuts at 5.
And I think that they're willing to give more wiggle room for Nisekoi because it still pulls very well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Now, do you think, which series do you think is going to end sooner between Fairy Tail or Toriko?
That was going to be my follow-up for you. That's amazing that we thought the same thing.
Our minds are so in sync, Nick.
I am convinced that Fairy Tail will outlast Toriko.
Really? I would almost think the inverse.
Well, Fairy Tail has this habit of just kind of constantly going on, whereas Toriko, you can look at it and be like, okay, we are definitely in the final stretch here. We're definitely at least in the final arc, or building up to it. Whereas Fairy Tail, like, they could flash through this whole Spriggan 12 Xerath arc, and then still do something else and pick up anyway.
I'd be so annoyed if they did.
Like, tell me that you would actually seriously be surprised, though.
No. This will be what blows my mind. Is if Fairy Tail ends, and if not in the same fucking week that magazine releases that chapter, Hero doesn't have 4 chapters of his new series already published. That'll be what blows my mind. I can't... That's a dude who I'm like, if he stops working, I think he explodes. So, that'll be kind of interesting to see.
By the way, actually, it looks like I actually have to eat a little bit of crow, because I just looked back through a bunch of past rankings for Jump. Apparently Nisekoi has been doing terribly the last couple of months.
Really?
Let's see here. The last time it was, like, outside of the bottom 5, except in color pages, was, like, April.
Ah, wow. That seems crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it might have to do with it also just being in the final stretch. They just slap it back there. Maybe that's what they're doing with Bleach, too. It's just like, whatever, it's going to end, so we'll just slap it here in the back of the magazine.
I mean, kind of looking at it, Toriko seems to fall down there, too, so maybe just the series ending kind of falls down sort of deal.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just everyone knows that it's kind of on its down on a downward trend now, so. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's actually answer questions that people wanted us to answer, then.
Yes.
Bullshit Ghostbuster discussion. Which of these series is going to end?
All the classic questions you guys came here for.
You want me to start? Or?
Yeah, you can start with this one.
Alright, this question comes to us from Jackson. Hello, Chris, Cap's butt, Rolo T, and Nick, Thor's boobs, Y-Rot. Okay.
I understand my part of that. I don't get your part.
Because Thor was a girl for a while?
Yeah, I don't know if he means the Jane Foster Thor, or if he's referring to Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, spoilers!
Yeah, I know, spoilers.
For that reveal that happened like a year ago.
For a character I don't know many people like, and for something that really wasn't a well-kept secret.
In this post-Civil War world, what have been your favorite good guys have to fight each other now confrontations in manga? Mine is Luffy and Usopp in Water 7.
That's a really good one, I think, actually.
I don't have a definitive answer for this one in terms of what is my favorite ever, but I have rules for it.
Okay.
For my good guy versus good guy confrontation.
You seem to be quite vocal regarding the idea of superheroes fighting each other before.
Yeah. So, basically, extenuating circumstances, such as, you know, misunderstandings or what have you, or mind control, all that stuff, immediately turn me off to a good guy versus good guy fight. Because inevitably, it's not going to be, you know, who wins the fight is going to be, can the person who is wrong be made to see reason? Can the mistake be resolved? And so everyone understands each other and they go and fight the real villain. Can the mind control be ended so that they can go after the real villain? It leaves stuff open for a cop-out. Which leads me to my next point. There cannot be a cop-out. There should just be two guys just fight each other and one of them wins. And so my favorite setup for this is just they're in a tournament and one has to win in order to proceed. So they fight each other. This is one of the reasons I like tournament arcs is because you get matchups that you don't normally expect. There can still be a cop-out, of course, but it's not as likely to happen, as in there is less than 100% chance it will happen. And then you can just have a winner. And that just because one person wins one time doesn't mean they would win every time. Just because you job once doesn't mean you're buried forever, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and, you know, to call upon, you know, like, wrestling examples, because it's easy to do that. Daniel Bryan versus John Cena is a great good guy versus good guy matchup. And that was a really good match, and one guy just won, straight up.
Yeah, and you don't get those enough.
Everyone is always so afraid that if you have one of your heroes lose to another, then it's that it will somehow diminish the loser. That's not the case. You can just have them lose one time. Maybe one of them just, you know, was a little bit more beaten up than the other. Maybe one of them just happened to catch the other off guard with an unrevealed technique, and if they fought again, it wouldn't work the second time.
Maybe it just wasn't the one guy's day, you know?
Right. You can have rematches between people, and, oh, you know, there needs to be a rubber match, so to speak, in order for things to resolve themselves. But if you never have one person win in the matchup, then there was no point in having it to begin with.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why Usopp versus Luffy is one of those good ones, because it does actually have a conclusion. It's a conclusion that's kind of foregone. Luffy's going to beat Usopp, but Usopp put such a good showing that you're kind of like, wow, you managed to make a fight that should have been one-sided as fuck into something really compelling, so bravo to that. And it comes with the good reasoning of both guys are heavily emotional and just doing what they think is right. And neither one of them is necessarily wrong in that situation. So that's probably one of the better examples. But in inverse, One Piece also has a really terrible example of this. Back in the Whiskey Peak arc, where Zoro was killing the bounty hunters who were pretending to be townspeople, and Luffy comes out and sees it and thinks he's just killing regular townspeople, they tease that the two of them are going to have a fight that just ends with them both punching Mr. Five out as, like, a joke. And I remember being really annoyed at that when I read it. I was like, why even bother teasing this? If you're not going to do anything with it, if they're not actually going to fight, then don't do it.
Yeah, because Zoro and Luffy, that is, like, the good guy versus good guy fight you could have in One Piece.
Yeah. So that stuff does annoy me. Luffy versus Usopp's a great example, and I guess if you want to go with it as well, the Damon Devilbats versus the Ojo White Knights is one I really like as well, because I think they're both kind of considered the good guys in that.
Mm.
And it's one of those things where there's so much of a compelling reason to root for both sides that it makes things really entertaining.
I think that's a little bit different, because that is still, though, like,
it's sports,
the good guy versus the rival.
Yeah, but compared to the fact that almost everyone else within Ice Shield, when they fight the Devilbats, they're given an antagonistic personality or some kind of antagonistic figurehead for them. Whereas this
What about the Wild Gunman?
Riku still kind of had. He wasn't evil, but I feel like he gave. We knew Shin from the entire start of the series, so that rival presence had grown into something we were more familiar with.
Hi, I'm Senna's big brother!
You dumb fucking stupid shitheads! I'm like, hey, Nick, you missed that one page right there where he insults the reader directly. It is tough, but I feel like the Ojo White Knights, to me, were a bit more of a compelling team, just because we had so much more underdog qualities from them, I guess, in their ways.
I would say that Yu-Gi-Oh! Does a lot of good guy versus good guy stuff. My preference, this is to name a preference and stuff, is if you're going to have the protagonist be one of the two heroes involved in the conflict, have them lose. It makes it more interesting.
It definitely does.
Because, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, let's say Naruto fights Sasuke. Well, you know, imagine in that first big confrontation that they have with the waterfall and all that stuff, imagine if Naruto just wins. Like, that completely changes the course of the series and stops there having to be the whole we have to go and get Sasuke and have him be redeemed thing. It cripples a lot of the motivation that Naruto has at the start of the you know, post-timeskip period, where he wants to save Sasuke. Now, I fucking hate where Sasuke's character went after that point, because he's such an intolerable shit. But that would have made a completely different series, and it would have been less interesting and much safer. Like, Naruto wins, and he brings Sasuke back, and that's it. That's the end of that whole plot line.
Yeah.
Or, you know, imagine, like, Bakugo and Deku have a fight. Deku wins, and Bakugo has to respect him forever.
How much more awesome would Duelist Kingdom have been had Joey beat Yugi in that final duel?
Oh, and he goes on to play Pegasus. Oh,
and gets just crushed because he doesn't have Yugi's fucking mind powers to block it out.
Well, and they also imply that Joey did eventually beat Yugi.
Did they?
Yeah, because at the end of Battle City, they just kind of walk towards each other, and they imply that they're going to have a duel. And then later on, Joey shows up and he's got his red eyes black dragon back. And in Under Battle City Rules, each duelist has to ante their best card. So it implies that, you know, Yugi anteed the red eyes black dragon.
I was going to say, Yugi fucking found some way to horseshit his way into saying the blue eyes.
Oh no, there's no way I could possibly give you one of the god cards. Red eyes black dragon is totally better, Joey.
It's totally my best. This two sacrifice 2400 2700 monster with no effect, you've got me.
It's 2400 2000, you fucking pleb.
Sorry, I made that card so much better than it actually is.
Joey's like, well, I could have Slife of the Sky Dragon, but all my support cards are for Red Eye Black Dragon, so
yeah, I'd have to build a slightly better deck.
I mean, I can't summon Red Eyes Darkness Dragon without it, so I might as well.
How am I gonna rework my whole fusion?
How am I gonna wear this sweet battle armor without it? Lord of the Red! Oh god, that was such a cool thing that happened. Anyway, that's the end of that question.
Well, that's the end of question one for this episode.
Jackson also has the question, what has been your favorite iteration of a common superpower? The example that he provides is the ability to control fire, like, was a fair example of that.
I've always thought that Luffy's version of stretching has been the only time I've found the power to stretch actually interesting. Because usually it's just like, I make myself really long! And I'm like, this doesn't seem nearly as interesting as it maybe thinks to them. But Luffy always did it in a visually impressive way and had a lot of creativity to it that was like, ah, now I can see why that's cool. Now, his is, I guess, slightly different because it's rubber, so it has that snapback effect. But just the stuff Luffy's done with it throughout the series I've always thought was really creative and really awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Mr. Fantastic's powers are fucking boring as shit.
Mm.
That's why they emphasize his ridiculous intelligence so much of the times, because his actual powers are not very impressive.
Yeah.
And there tend to be variations on his power, where it's not just Mr. Fantastic, but, you know, the guy's stretchy unitard is a different color. Like Plastic Man in DC, he doesn't just stretch his body, he can basically just manipulate his shape into almost any shape at all. Yeah, you gotta do something different with it. I always find that wind is a very common thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked, what was it? God, fucking, what was his name? I really liked Jin, I think, in Yu Yu Hakusho. Like, he was okay. Like tornadoes around his fists and punch people with them. But, you know, just the ability to just manipulate wind is kind of bland. You gotta do something extra with it in order to make it interesting. They did that pretty well in Last Airbender, because they, of course, made it martial arts focused and such. And Aang had a bunch of cool different tricks that he would do. Fire is a difficult one because fire. Someone who uses fire shows up in basically every single goddamn
Everything.
Series.
Every series I think we read
because
right now
has fire is cool.
Yeah, and it's an easy power to give someone and make them strong. Like almost every shonen series that's a battle series is going to have some fire themed character. Ace, Yamamoto, Magnuswing.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually go.
Boy Mustang.
Hang on, I'm gonna go through the list of the current manga that we do right now, because Black Clover,
definitely.
Yeah, it's Magna, Bleach had a couple,
Yamamoto.
Most prominently Yamamoto, yeah, Fairy Tail is Natsu, mm-hmm. Duh, Food Wars, well, they all cook.
Yeah, but we did actually just have a fire-themed or heat-themed character with Rentaro.
That's true, yes, and his thing was that he could also cook at low temperature.
Yes.
With the stupid upside down crosses. Actually, like, the most prominent fire user in Naruto was actually Sasuke.
Yeah,
he just switched to electricity. He's like, his fire powers were too boring.
They were just like, can't do enough with this.
Well, I just breathe fire out of my mouth, whatever.
Although, technically, I guess you could say they all come from the land of fire, so maybe that's the way it kind of keys into whatever. It. Yeah. Naruto's probably the worst.
No one uses fire in Nisekoi. Oh,
My Hero has Endeavor and Todoroki.
Mm-hmm. One Piece, of course, had Ace.
And now Sabo.
Right, now Sabo, yeah.
And, in a way, Akainu with lava powers.
Right. One Piece, Toriko.
Star June.
Right. Star June's is pretty cool, because he's focused on swords, and fire swords are always cool.
Yeah.
Like, that is, like, one of Nick's rules of fiction. Like, a flaming sword, or a sword made of fire, a blade made of fire, is always cool. That is it. World Trigger doesn't have any fire powers, but that's because it's
World
all...
Triggers. It doesn't have...
Give it time. Yeah, there'll be a fire power somewhere.
Yeah, I'll just say, it doesn't have any kind of special powers or things like that so far, nothing in that realm,
We have seen some special triggers, though, like some black triggers and the like, so I'm sure that there'll be some sort of flame-focused thing eventually. And, you know, literally, all the ones that I named, like, aside from Star June's fire swords are cool, every single fire user that I named is kind of boring use of fire.
I actually would disagree if only on Ace, because I thought he did it in kind of cool ways when we did get to see him do it. I mean, his main thing, the burning fist, was kind of boring, but that fight he had with Blackbeard where he, like, shot out motes of fire and kind of create like firework explosions around him, or like put his fingers together to shoot like crosses of fire. I thought that was kind of an interesting way to at least focus and display the fire in a way that's normally not just like Natsu every week. Here's a big burning flame ball waving.
I gather fire on my fist and I punch you.
Yeah. So I at least give... I've always given Oda credit for a lot of his abilities to take common use powers and at least do something creative with them. He's gotten a little less impressive with it recently, but I think overall with the series, he's been really successful about taking common powers and not being as boring with them.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Next email!
Yes. Question here from somebody who gave us no name. Doesn't even have an intro. Mirage was a major failure, at least in terms of popularity, and only lasted 16 chapters.
Be a little more blunt, why don't you?
I know, it's kind of depressing. While these are other cases of an author following an unpopular work of a highly successful one, such as Bleach following Zombie Powder and Nisekoi following Double Arts, there seems to be an especially large difference in popularity for My Hero Academia and Mirage. Why do you think My Hero Academia was such an immediate success, whereas Mirage couldn't even make it to 20 chapters? He's just twisting that dagger in our hearts.
Oh, really, yeah. I think it is that Barrage was a little bit too complicated. In terms of setup, in terms of setting. You know, because it's like, okay, they're on this alien world. I'm following you so far. There's this kid named Barrage who's a peasant. Okay. There's a Prince and the Pauper thing where he's identical to the prince who somehow accidentally gets killed and then he gets taken in, and we spend 3 chapters setting it up and explaining it. It's like, if you focus on it, it's all dramatically interesting, but it takes such a long time to explain stuff. And there's this ancient relic that only he can use, and so on and so forth. There's so much of that setting that would be easy to forget because there's so many details to it. My Hero Academia. It's a world of superheroes. The main protagonist doesn't have any powers. He meets All Might, who is the world's greatest hero, who gives him superpowers. Go. He goes to a school in order to learn how to become a superhero, and then it's Sky High. So it's a lot easier to understand the premise, and also superhero stories are really popular right now. People are heavily invested in them. I don't think people are invested in alien sci-fi, medieval fantasy crossover as much.
Yeah, I think a big part of it has to come with right time, right kind of genre. And another part of it just sometimes comes right down to luck of timing and then, you know, catching the right eyes. Sometimes you can't exactly define why a series does so much better than another one. I certainly don't look at Barrage and say, wow, what a garbage series, I still love it. Just sometimes it doesn't catch on with people the same way, you know, and maybe if that same series were introduced in Jump today, it might have a completely different result. It might catch a different audience, it might catch even less, but you know, sometimes it's not completely simple and easily defined. Although I think the superhero aspect of My Hero and the simplistic opening chapter are big reasons why it did succeed over Barrage.
And a lot of the stuff that makes My Hero Academia so good is still present in Barrage. I think that it's that the former just has a better hook to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. I did a really short one. You want me to do this one to ease up my voice?
Go ahead, yeah.
Sure. All right. This one is from Sent from My iPhone. Sent from My iPhone.
It's Ginger Straw Hat.
Okay. I wanted to go with Sent from My iPhone because that's the last line. Hey, why through the fire and flames, ruler of time, and roll out Land of Confusion T. Now, are you doing the Disturbed version or the Genesis version of Land of Confusion?
The Disturbed version is the one I'm more familiar with, okay. Honestly. So
that's fair enough. Have you ever heard, this is like a tangent topic, but have you ever heard of...
No, we can't go on a tangent. Where are we going to recap? We never go on those.
Have you heard Disturbed's, I think it's Disturbed, did the cover of Sound of Silence?
What the fuck were they thinking?
It's so weird. Because, like, for...
They've done some weird covers. Like, Land of Confusion is their best cover. Mm-hmm. Like, instant. Shout, like, is good, but it's a little bit too Disturbed-y, mm-hmm. If you know what I mean. What was that one? It was a U2 song, right? Still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Really?
That was a weird one. That was a weird one. I didn't really like that. And then the Sound of Silence, like, well, that can't be worse than Still haven't found what I'm looking
for. It's so bad. If you listen to it, it just sounds so cartoonish at a point. Like, it sounds like a joke we would make.
Sounds of Silence.
Yeah, well, like, for a while, it's just doesn't sound good, but then you get to the point where, like, oh, no, feel, no, no, feel the first arrow. Like, they start getting, like, the Disturbed voice in there, and you're like, oh, what are you doing? It's like Limp Bizkit covering Behind Blue Eyes. You're just like, you just had no idea what
you're doing. Actually one of their best songs, honestly. Because it's so much better than their shit that they usually do.
Or like when Madonna covered American Pie.
Oh, God.
All right.
Or then there was like what, Britney Spears and I Love Rock and Roll.
There's so many bad ones.
Oh, God.
We'll have to save that for a different topic, though. Hey, guys. You talked about series that have great villains, and then maybe you talked about ones that don't. Specifically, Bleach, Naruto, and Fairy Tail.
Oh, wait. Quick. Hang on. Dragon Force did a cover of Ring of Fire.
Oh.
I was just like, God, why?
Yeah, that's another. I feel like it metal bands really shouldn't be doing covers of things.
Oh, God. They Dragon Forced it up, too. It was weird.
That almost sounds worth listening to, just to hear it. They all seem to have very mediocre villains, but my least favorite series of weak villains is Fairy Tail. The reason is that outside of Xerath, every villain in the series is forgettable. That made me wonder, why do I remember bad villains like Aizen, Okiora, Obito, and Hidan, and no real villains from Fairy Tail?
Honestly, I think it's because Fairy Tail doesn't build up its villains.
I think it's...
I think that's it. You remember Aizen, Okiora, Obito because they were present through a good chunk of their series, and you remember Hidan because in his little mini arc he was built up and focused on for a while. Fairy Tail, minor villains, last, like, three chapters.
And there's just nothing to them. If they don't end up joining the guild and becoming friends with them afterwards, 90% of the time their villains are completely forgettable.
Like, Brandish, I don't even think you can really call a villain because she spent so little time actually as an antagonist to Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
Our current ones, okay, there's Irene, there's August. fine. They've been built up and focused on for a little while. And in the newest chapter of Fairy Tale, a member of the Spriggan 12 that whose name we could not even remember before got reintroduced.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah.
Like, there's members of Fairy Tale that they've... or antagonists of Fairy Tale they fought that I can't remember many details about. Like, Brain from the Eurasion Six Arc, I think it turned out his stick was actually the real, like, enemy. Hades from that island arc. And despite the fact he was a former member of Fairy Tale, just didn't leave any kind of distinct impression. Their Fairy Tale villains are usually just amorphous blobs of evil that get beaten and don't really leave much of an impact on you. Now, compare that to somebody, you know, Bad Guns.
I barely remember Ozma, and he was like the main villain of his arc. He was like, that was the thing with Urza's backstory. He was the main villain in that, right?
You mean Gerard?
Fuck, what was it? Which one was Ozma then? See, I can't even remember.
Ozma.
Yeah, he was the wood guy.
Oh, he was also from the Fairy Tale Tree Island bullshit arc where Apocalypse Dragon comes.
Oh, right, yeah. The promotion exam, which then didn't really get followed up on.
No one got promoted.
I remember Loki because of that bullshit fist thing, and of course then him rejoining Fairy Tale. I remember Kyoko because of the weird kink.
But those are even, like, their minor villains.
And so I remember Mard Gear because of his goofy-ass speaking pattern that kept on changing.
Now, if we hadn't had that, though, I think Mard Gear would be entirely forgettable. Just like Future Sting. Can you remember details about
Future
Sting?
I remember he was upset because Frosh got killed, and that turned him evil.
Yeah.
And he came back in time, and there were multiple timelines, and so there was a future Lucy who got killed. Like, I barely remember that whole arc. That was the tournament arc, wasn't it?
It was awful. No, this was a little... well, yes, I think actually it was. It was just weirdly placed at the end of the tournament, so there was no conclusion to the tournament. There was no real separation between the two, but it didn't really...
I remember, Sting surrendered to Fairy Tale, even though he could have beaten them because they were so determined to win.
God, that was... Anyway, the point I'm trying to get at...
The point is, Fairy Tale.
Yeah, Fairy Tale doesn't have very memorable villains across the board, whereas other series might have bad villains, but usually they're so dumb they're funny. Like, I'm going to remember Gremmy 1,000 times more than I'm going to remember Future Sting, because Gremmy's just stupid. He's dumb. And it's that notion of being able to enjoy something that's bad more than enjoying something that's boring. I'd rather watch Sharktopus, because it's a bad, funny movie, than watch Hercules The Legend Begins starring Kellan Lutz from Twilight, because that's just a boring movie. You know, that's just the kind of way it tends to be. A bad villain is more memorable when they're silly, stupid, and awful than a villain who's just forgettable. Mm-hmm. Alright, question two here. I know this may sound weird, but what are some of your favorite meh arcs? Arcs in manga that are not especially good, but have quite a few moments that plop right down the middle of a good to bad scale. My example would be Thriller Bark in One Piece.
I think that if you have a favorite arc, then you don't consider it a meh arc. It's like that's just contradictory. That's like an oxymoron right there.
I can see what he's trying to get at, of arcs that aren't considered particularly great, but you think maybe have more in them than people evaluate. Like, I consider Skypiea. I don't like that arc particularly, but in time I've realized, like, oh, there's some cool parts in that I kind of like. Maybe it's underrated. I certainly wouldn't consider it one of my favorites, but definitely an arc I look back at and I'm like, eh. Take it or leave it.
So, like, an overall forgettable arc, but that has some parts of it that you like?
Yeah. Or an arc that you're just like, it's maybe sandwiched around better parts that you're just like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that afterwards because it wasn't as good as these parts or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Skypiea and Thriller Arc are good examples of that.
Okay.
Question three. Do you guys ever have any kind of music playing in your head as you read a series?
No.
Generally no, as well. Although I will say when I was reading the final chapters of 20th Century Boys, I had Boston's Peace of Mind playing in my head a lot. I think I had mentioned it at one point. I don't know if it was Boston specifically or Peace of Mind specifically, but I remember listening to Peace of Mind going through like the last like volume or two of 20th Century Boys.
Okay.
Question four. I greatly enjoyed My Hero Academia. It's one of my favorite series we can jump, but lately I've heard many people express great disappointment in it. They say that while the initial premise of My Hero Academia is interesting, the chapters that follow the first and the events that unfold are very underwhelming and just don't live up to the hype that the series has managed to make for itself. Do you think that these feelings on the series are understandable or not?
Have they gotten to the last 20 chapters?
I would absolutely agree with your feelings on that, Ginger Straw Hat, because I feel that My Hero Academia is rather untraditional in the way it tells its story, because most shonen battle series tend to constantly give you a villain to chase after, some new big antagonist to follow after, whereas My Hero hasn't really done that. It's almost always been, all right, here are students going into the next part of their school life, and then some villain group interrupts it and causes problems, but all of those have been, you know, stepping stones towards this much bigger conclusion that might honestly be the only story that this manga is trying to tell, which is the conflict between One for All and All for One. So I think Stain may be the only traditional kind of break in that, where it's like, here's an antagonist, we're going to build him up, go after him. But otherwise, My Hero tends to be about training, has comedy, someone interrupts it, and I can see why people would be like, huh, it's kind of weird, there's no, like, build-up, there's no uprising to a climax and a fall, it's just like, oh, these fuckheads intervened, well, let's have a couple people show off their powers and get back to it.
I get that, but I think that, well, first off, this question was sent to us in May.
Yeah.
So, a lot of the events that have happened recently were not part of this. And so I do think that I think that maybe My Hero Academia still hasn't peaked yet. So, there you go.
Yeah, it's just possible, too. It's best stuff hasn't really come out yet. So.
Okay.
And finally, lastly, I have no good opening for this one, so I just want to ask, who is your favorite female character from each series in the recap? I love this side note. Chris, you could also name one from Hunter x Hunter, since you used to recap it, and it may or may not still be in the magazine by the time you read this. Wow. I know we're 2 months behind on emails, but it's still funny to me. It's like, oh, how well we called it.
Hunter x Hunter has female characters?
Yeah, there's Biscuit and Kurapika, if you just want to pretend.
If you just want to pretend?
Yeah, he's got a pretty feminine shape to him. I got an imagination.
Well, I think that the easiest way to do this would just be to go down the list. Sure. Black Clover.
Noelle.
Rebecca.
Fuck you.
Noelle. Bleach.
Rukia.
Rukia as well, but I have a very soft spot for Tatsuki.
Okay, I can see that.
Fairy Tale.
Levy.
I was actually going to say Lucy, but honestly, Levy too, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's weird. I
basically just default to Lucy because she's not Urza.
It's weird. For a series that has as many female characters as it does, Fairy Tale, I feel like, only has one or two female characters I actually even remotely like.
Because it has, like, three character types.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, how is this character fan service?
Okay, well, like, there's, like, four. There's Urza, there's Lucy, there's, Lucy and all the other typical, you know, like, just fan service-y characters. Urza, who is God mode. Levy, who is the likable one. And the villain, who is also fan service-y.
Yeah, who's kind of a combination of Lucy and Urza.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Food Wars. Megumi.
Alice.
I figure, but yeah.
Yeah. My Hero.
That's a tough one, because not a lot of them have really had their chance to do stuff.
I like Asui a lot. I think she's
I like her too.
Frog Girl. She's different, which is part of the reason I like her a lot.
When I first read this question, honestly, I came to the realization that series that in general I like, it's harder for me to answer this question because it's easier to just point to a character that stands out amongst a bunch that I don't like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bleach, I don't like that series, but I like Rukia.
Yeah.
I like that scene. Yeah. Whereas My Hero Academia is like, well, I like all of them to differing degrees. You know, I like Uraraka, I like Zuyu. I like Yairozu.
Yairozu's a good one. I always forget her name, which is a shame because I like her a lot. But the girl,
Earjack girl.
Earjack girl.
My current favorite though is Midoriya's mom, because she's had some really good, a really good couple of chapters.
Which is great, because you gave her actual name, too. I know she has a real name, but I love that it jumped Inca. And called her Midora's mom.
Yeah, it's, even that's in the so official, awesome. Even the official little character profiles, Midori's mom.
That's great. One Piece.
That's a tough one, because again, like I just like all of them to differing degrees.
I put Nami, but it's not one I'm like super confident in or focused in. There's other female characters I like, but I guess she'd probably be the one I like the most of all of them.
I'm gonna say Perona because she is very different from the others.
Perona's a really good one too.
Toriko?
There are women in this?
Exactly.
I actually wrote this down, and that's when I got to Toriko. I was like, there are women in this?
I'm going to say Chiyo.
Melk? The second? Was that a girl?
Okay. World Trigger's another tough one, because there's so many good ones.
Laura, moving on.
What was that?
Ghidorah, moving on.
I figured you would say that, but God, I like
that. Oh, well, this is actually
okay,
one
every
of the
female character who is not Katori. Well,
Katori is easy. Katorah is hard. Katori right. Is like, oh, I got 1,000 I can go with. Actually, it's hard to go with one outside of that, because there are so many really good female characters. I like Konami a lot. I like the operator a lot, whose name I'm blanking on.
Usami.
I always get like it in my mind for a brief moment that it fucking flutters away until the next time I need to remember it, and it's just like, you don't remember it anymore, boy. No. Chika, I've actually started to grow on.
Yeah, she's really coming to her own the last few months.
Kitora, as I already said, but we're not going with her. I feel like there are others too, and I'm just
Konami's pretty cool.
Nasu and her squad, I thought, were very cool.
Yeah,
there are a lot of really good ones in that series.
Yeah, exactly. Nisekoi for bonus.
Chitagay.
Right. I'm torn between Tsugumi and Ruri. So there you go. There's right. Your answer.
Thank you to your Straw Hat for your questions.
All right, this one is from
Brawla.
Rala. Okay, there it is. I looked at the joke title, which is a To Lover reference, and I was just like, I don't recognize this person. And okay, there it is. Hello, Nick, a.k.a. Y stands for the Yuri we want to read, Ruler of Time. And Chris, a.k.a. Rolo Sternritter T, the Trigger, the style with the power to write smutty fanfics about teenagers, and by this, triggering a lot of parents.
I think we haven't gotten any emails from parents. Like,
that's amazing, isn't it?
My child won't be allowed to listen to your podcast.
Don't listen to our podcast if you're under 18, folks.
Yeah.
Two questions. First, which army would win in an all-out battle, Afto Krator or the Gotei 13? This is a difficult question because we don't know nearly as much about Afto Krator as we do about the Gotei 13. I feel like the power scale in Bleach is much stronger.
That's what it comes down to.
But the Gotei 13 are far more incompetent.
This is true. She puts rules in this that it's meant to be that both sides are at full strength, so it's Afkator with Inodora and Hyusei, and it's the Gotei 13, which for some reason their high points considered after they lost Aizen, Jin, and Tosen and replaced both fucking Shinji, Love, and Rose or whatever.
Yeah, if Aizen were part of the Gotei 13 at this point, it would be kind of an X factor, because if he sides with the Gotei 13, they're going to win, but if he decides to betray them, then they're going to lose.
Yeah, and foot soldiers are included in it. I would say it's going to be ultimately the Gotei 13, not because they're like better, it's just because the power scales of what characters can do in Bleach are so much higher than what we've seen in Black Triggers even be capable of. So, like, a lot of characters in Bleach, the only way you can beat their Bankai is if your Bankai happens to be the bullshit counter to theirs. You know, like, do you have the ability to avoid being incinerated by a flame that can engulf the entire planet in a fifth of a second? No? Well, I'm sorry, Border, but that's what that dude does.
Mm-hmm. Second question, it relates to Ochaku Uraraka from My Hero Academia. Basically, Brawla explains that Uraraka, she didn't really like her at first because she's very stereotypically girly and mostly intended to just be there to be the love interest for Deku. She's kind of come into her own since then, but by comparison, I really liked Suyu, the frog girl. She has a unique design, she's interesting, she has a nice quirk. She seems less girly compared to Ochako, but at the same time, she's a more compelling character to me. I also noted that many of Ochako's fans are mostly boys who see her as a girlfriend material and as waifu. Basically, the question that follows from this is, would you say an intentionally girly character is really necessary? Or how should a girly character be handled so that she could still be interesting without just being the love interest? Katara from Avatar.
This is a good question. This is a good one. I think the most important thing is, despite the medium and who it's intended for, I don't think you should ever, and maybe even because of the medium and who it's intended for, you shouldn't write a female character solely into be that love interest thing and not Garamori.
She should always have her own character.
Yes. And I think the big thing, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being a love interest, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being a typically girly character, but those characters, then you need to make sure you give them interesting things of themselves that aren't related to the fact that they're a love interest for somebody else, you know? Give them their own inherent storyline that's going to be worth following in and of itself. Sakura, in a way, kind of had a little bit of that, but just kind of got lost because she stopped being the focus. I will say, I think recently this has gotten a lot better. Like, I'll take a Sakura any day of the week over a Chi-Chi or something like that.
Well, even Chi-Chi, to begin with, was, you know, this very violent, ultra-determined person who, like, was, like, so just psychopathically trying to pursue Goku in order to make him her husband. And, of course, he didn't get it because he was stupid. But then once she just settled into, well, she's the wife, then it's like, well, that character arc is complete, and she's going to be in the background from now on. And that's something that's suffered by a lot of those love interest characters. Like, Orihime was a lot more interesting at the start of Bleach because she had this ditz character, she provided a lot of comic relief, she had her whole thing where she was trying to get stronger, and now she's just like, I'll be there to provide your shield and be your white mage, and I love you, Ichigo.
Yeah, like, if you give her her actual, like, it's not those factors you just mentioned that make it, like, annoying and bad, it's the fact that there's no narrative beyond that. Like, that's all her character is I want to protect you. And it's like, there should be more of this character than just that. She used to be more than just that.
Or even if the crux of a character is just that they, you know, are in love with someone and want to be together with them, what are they doing and how does that affect what they're trying to do? Mm-hmm. Like, if, like, Sakura's thing where she was trying to keep up with Naruto and Sasuke, she was trying to get stronger, that was one of the most interesting things about her, was that she realized she was falling behind and she couldn't just stayed being this pretty cute cheerleader on the sidelines. She had to toughen up and get stronger so that she could keep up with them. And then she still fell into the background. I think that, in general, if you're going to have that person who's there to be the love interest, then they should still, even if that is, as you are designing that character, your goal of, I'm going to make this character be, you know, the one who is there so that, you know, guys will think that she's attractive, so that she'll be a love interest for my male main character, even if you're doing it for that reason, which is a terrible approach to have for a character. Even then, they should have their own character. Like I said before at the start of this, Katara from Avatar has her own thing going on. She is Aang's love interest throughout that story, but she has her own thing, and she has her own different interactions with other characters beyond that. Nami is actually a great example because she's mostly there because she's tits, but she, what is her thing? It has nothing to do with being a love interest for any of the characters. She wants money. She wants to, you know, see the world. She has her own motivations.
She's heavily motivated by family.
So yeah, I definitely see Bravo's point about, you know, Uraraka just seems like she's just kind of there to be Deku's love interest, and she definitely seemed that way at first. The more we learn about her, the better she gets. Mm-hmm. Like, she had that awesome fight with Bakugo, we've seen some more of her backstory with her parents and stuff. Yeah, just because a character is female does not mean that they should just be there for eye candy.
And I think she made a mention of the fact that she likes Asui more than Uraraka, and part of it just, like, or Uraraka seemed too typically girly. I think it's actually a big reason why Asui is kind of as liked as she is. She does kind of buck the generally feminine trends of a female character. Like, usually you don't give a female character superpowers that are frog-related. Like, it's just seen as...
Make her appearance look less attractive on purpose.
Something that's going to make her seem gross or weird or something like that. That's usually not the MO. So something like that, I think, is maybe part of the reason why she's so likable, is because it's like, hey, we don't have to follow that usual trend of things.
Well, that and the furries.
The furries. Brawla made a second question regarding the Gotai 13 thing about if we could see any two... If there were any fights we wanted to see within that. I just made a note of... I think it'd be interesting to see Kumo Moore versus Rambian, the guy with the big minigun, essentially.
Rambian, right. Yeah.
So a guy with a big Trion gun versus a guy with a really big sword. I thought that'd be kind of cool.
The guy who could cause a lot of damage. I guess the guy who takes damage when his giant target is damaged.
It might end up being a really one-sided fight. I'm not going to lie, but I think it'd be cool for a moment. Oh, wow.
I think you're going to take two questions.
Yeah. Again. This is from Yelson. Hey, guys, quick question. Do you know Little Kreebo's wrestling show? Do you watch it? No, I do not. I don't know of it.
Lil Kariba's got a show called The Mark Mark, in which basically he just does a recap of recent Raw or recent pay-per-view. He's got his own kind of character of bizarrely optimistic person, despite how terrible he thinks wrestling is, basically. I watched it a lot more religiously when he first started doing it, but... honestly, I don't keep up with wrestling as much as I did back then, because I don't always watch Raw, so I don't always want to get someone else's thoughts on it. And also, he has a bit of a schedule slip thing going on, so there will be the thing where, like, he posts his WrestleMania reaction, like, at the end of April, stuff like that. That's just, so I don't watch it as much as I used to. I do still think that it's funny and it's well-produced.
I'm sure it's a really well done show. I like everything Little Kreebo does. I just don't watch wrestling stuff, so I don't watch wrestling supplementary stuff.
Yeah, you don't really care what the guy has to say about Adam Rose.
I'm like my favorite wrestler. Question here then from Supernova RX. Hello, Pomegranate Prince Nick and Baron of the Banana Chris. I don't get either of those.
Neither do I.
First is a dance contest. What's to occur? I'm just skipping over this one because it's dumb.
We're not going to pick every single...
Which do you think should have had more... Who do you think should have had more battles? Chad or Taya? Taya being from Yu-Gi-Oh. Why Taya? And he answers the question.
No. He explains why is Taya in that question.
I thought he was immediately answering like, why Taya? Okay, I'll answer it for you.
He points out, and is correct about this, Taya was undefeated in duels. And, in fact, I actually checked on Yu-Gi-Oh! Wikia before we started this up, and a little trivia tidbit on her article is that she is the only character in that entire series of Yu-Gi-Oh!, the original one, that never lost a duel.
Now, it's somewhat ticky-tack, because didn't Mai surrender?
Yes, and she...
And she beat Joey when he didn't know what spell cards were.
But she also did beat Big Two, straight up. Crump.
Yes. Now, they were all idiots. Weren't they all businessmen?
Well, Crump also had the worst or second worst deckmaster effect, which was just my water monsters getting 200 attack, but they're still weak little fucking penguins anyway. Who gives a shit? So, a little bit of a caveat there. But she did win, and she is undefeated, that is true.
That is true. And when you think about it, all of Chad's opponents have been, like, on that same level of, like, yeah, you should probably put an asterisk next to this big victory there, buddy.
Because he was immediately defeated by someone stronger anyway.
Yeah, and every person he beat, it was like, oh, wow, the 7th seed of the 8th division? Oh, wow, you're really cruising.
It was the 3rd seed, I'll have you know.
I didn't even think it was that high. I almost need to go back. I thought it was like the 5th seed or something.
Tatsufasa? Tatsumasa? He moved his sword really quickly, that's all.
Yeah, he had like a, almost like a fucking mace or something, yeah.
No, it was just a sword, he just moved it really quickly. Yeah. And then Chad just punched him and defeated him immediately. Anyway, I'm going to go with Chad on this because Taya, or Anzu if you prefer, whatever, her big thing was not dueling, that was not the point of her character, whereas Chad... He should be fighting more, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
Next question.
Do we not? I was trying to find what that guy's power or name was. What is it?
I'll look it up.
Third, if you were a ninja in Naruto, what would be your village and powers? For me, it would be Hidden Leaf Village of Fire Jutsu. And no using the tech bands. Also, no cheating like Boruto.
Tatsufasa and Joji.
What seat was he?
No, third seat.
Okay. Well, all right. I admit I was wrong, Nick. Unlike those bubbles, which I fought you to the bitter end on.
And then I was right, and you were like, man.
I was like, you probably just got to Toei and told them to animate that.
Just told them how to animate
that. I know how you play this game, Nick.
Oh, God.
I said, I don't know, I wanted to go with something a little different, so I was like, Village of Mist. And I'd have, like shield jutsu, so kind of like a medical ninja, but, you know, like a variation of it, shields.
Let me tell you about my original characters.
That's the issue, it's like...
I did not answer this question, because I was like, I'm not going to tell you guys about my original characters.
I just came up with ideas I thought would be kind of interesting.
Obviously, one person wants to know, but I still don't think anyone wants to know.
Here you go, because your next one is...
Someone else asked this question, too.
Like, I think they asked a slight variation on it. This one is, if you had Shinigami powers, what would be your Shikai, Bankai, Zanpakuto, and Zanpakuto spirit? I think someone else asked if we wanted, like, which bleach power you'd want. I don't know why I wrote this down, and I'm like, half this shit doesn't even, like, attach itself to one another. I don't know why I was like, I want my Zanpakuto to look like a scimitar, I guess just to be a different-looking sword. But then my Shikai is like a bladed chain? I don't even know what that means. Why does that turn into a scimitar? And I just put totem pillar for Bankai. I don't know if it does anything. Or if
so what do you, wait, so he would be a totem pole who talks?
Yeah, he's just like, yo, what up? I'm just like, do you do anything? Like, nope, you got hosed, buddy. Like, this is... Bankai's do represent my spirit, because this is exactly what I feel like I deserve.
So it'd be like that one 80s cartoon, the Pawpaw Bears, with the totem spirits, the totem spirit Megazord.
I think it was supposed to be that the totem did something, like it was a giant totem, that, like, pillar that appeared, and then, like, it would restrict you, like, the opponents in some way, but I didn't put more detail than just totem pillar. Beware my sweet totem pillar, Bankai. So yeah, that's Crescent, some Supernova RX. Thank you.
Alright, this next one's from Pheasant Tail. Hello, Saint Nick and Father Christmas. I like that.
That's good.
There's a little bit of a thing here. Our Chris, you once said that if you ever met Oda, you would bend over and beg him to take your butt virginity.
Oh, I do remember that.
Then it described your hypothetical excitement if Oda would use the incident in a future chapter. Well, Bartolomeo is the butt virginity guy.
In a way, he really
Chris,
is.
Chris, you're Bartolomeo.
Maybe that's why I want him to join the crew so much, Nick, because I'm like, it could be like me on the crew.
You want your self-insert to be on the Straw Hats, yeah?
Yeah, it'd be nice. I'd like to dream.
The actual question is, if each of the Straw Hats were to receive an existing stand from JoJo, what would it be? Well, Chris.
I'm like, Nick, don't you want to answer with the three or four stands you may have heard of in passing? I actually gave an answer for everyone on this, although one was very hard for me to figure out. So Luffy gave Star Platinum to, because the stand basically does what he does already, just stronger, which is punch things really hard and really fast. So, felt like that was kind of an easy one for him. Nami would have the lock, which was a stand from Part 4, which was basically, if you did something that made you feel guilty towards the loser, you got a giant lock on your chest that would weigh you down until you basically paid them back. So, this guy used it to, like, con people into feeling bad. Like, oh no, I, you know, punched you in the mouth and your tooth fell out. And then you find out later, like, it's a fake tooth, but it doesn't matter because you already have the lock on you. So, Nami would do well with that, just as being a greedy person. Usopp, I said sticky fingers or sex pistols. I think he utilized both in interesting ways. He's a very creative guy.
Both of those are dirty as hell.
Well, sticky fingers was the zipper double fruit, or stand. And sex pistols...
Requires inventiveness.
Yeah, and sex pistols was essentially just, like, six tiny spirits that this one guy in part five uses in like combination with a pistol he has. So he like shoots, and then the spirits will like kick the bullet in different directions. And
that's cool.
It was a very like focused power that he got a lot of use out of. Sanjay gave Diver Down, which was a stand that like could hit something and then store the impact in it to like use it later. So I figure a very intelligent person like Sanjay would get use out of that. Chopper, Crazy Diamond, as you said. Robin would have Moody Blues, which was a stand that lets you go back and revisit scenes that happened in an area at a different time. So that would be very good with her interest in history. Frankie, Bad Company, which was just a stand that made like a little miniature army. And Brooke, I gave Silver Chariot. The one I had the most trouble with was Zoro, because I legitimately was like, Zoro wouldn't use a stand. He would refuse to use a stand, because that's just not who he is. So I gave him the Hand, which is one of those powerful stands, but the only reason he'd use it is if someone tries to run away, he would keep erasing the space between them. He's like, you're not getting away, we're finishing this.
And he wouldn't have to actually chase them and get lost.
Yeah, he could just rip through areas until he got where he wanted to. So I think that worked out for him a lot.
Alright. This comes from Jenna Bacon-Lefkowitz.
Oh, yes, sorry, that's mine. Hello, Unbreakable Krishy Smith and Nick Najakoop. Very good. I like the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt reference. I have two little questions as always. I hope you enjoy them when you answer them and say late June, maybe? You're close. Can you name what you consider to be the highest point of each of the manga you cover in the recap? When were they at their best and how they managed to stay at that level?
I still maintain that the mixed date is the best part of Black Clover so far.
I wrote down answers for these, but I discluded essentially any of the series that haven't been running for a while, so I didn't put anything for Food Wars, Black Clover, World Trigger, or My Hero, because they haven't been running long enough to really say a high World point for them.
World Trigger's been going for 3 years, dude.
Yeah, but 90%, like, I feel like 60% of that has just been that one arc, the invasion arc. So I could say that, but it's sort of like saying, I guess it's lived up to that, and we've only been out of it for like a year and a half. I did one for Bleach, Fairy Tail, One Piece, and Toriko, which is a series that I've been like 5+ years, essentially. Bleach, I say, I think it was the Hollow contest between Uryu and Ichigo was my high point of the series, because it was in that early part before the Soul Society got super too involved. It was the arc where Chad and Orihime got their powers, so you felt like the potential of the series was just overwhelming. It created Uryu, who was this really interesting rival for Ichigo. And no, it has not stayed up and lived up to that quality. Fairy Tail considered the Phantom Guild arc, the Phantom Lord arc, to be its high point. Again, they created a really good like antagonist group. They had like interpersonal stories. Elfman had his own miniature arc within that storyline. That's baffling to me when I go back and think about it. And Dope, again, it did not hang up. One Piece, I consider it the Enies Lobby arc. Which I kind of was torn between Enies Lobby, Marineford, or Alabasta. I think all three of those are really, really good. But I want Enies Lobby because I think it just has the most stuff in it that I like. Mm-hmm. And Toriko, I consider the Century Soup arc.
I'm going to agree with you on those last two. Fairy Tale? I don't know. It's all one nebulous blob for me, honestly. Well, no, wait, that one early arc that, introduced, what's his name? Gray's...
Leon.
Right, Leon, right. The one that introduced Leon that involved him going to the village.
The Moon Trip arc, I think is what people call it, or the Moon Island arc.
Right, that, I thought that one was a really cool arc.
Okay, yeah.
With the cool twist at the end, with the, village being of monster people. Bleach, it's tough. I really like the beginning of it. I like the Grand Fisher arc, the Lomini arc. But I think that overall, the high point has got to be the climax of the Soul Society arc. Ichigo saving Rukia, unleashing his Bankai, fight with Byakuya, and then the little incident surrounding it where Aizen reveals himself as the villain and then escapes. You know, promising great things to come. No, did not match that hype. That has to be like the main difference that I have with you between those.
That's fair enough. And since you answered a question about who Alice's favorite characters would be in each of the WMR covered manga, I wanted to ask you the same question, but instead of Alice, it's Grimmy. Who would his favorite characters be? So he would like the most boring characters
exactly.
in the series.
Let's see.
Black Clover would be Asta.
Yeah.
He'd love Asta.
Bleach.
Probably Ichigo. Like, not that Ichigo's inherently boring, but I think he just looks at it, he's just like, look at all the powers he has. That's so incredible.
Grimmy's just like the world's shittiest fanboy of every series.
He's just easily impressed by the most basic and boring shit. He's just this dude has so many redesigns.
Natsu is like, he summons fire on his hand. That's amazing.
He'd be stuck between Natsu and Urza, definitely. He'd be like, Urza has so many sweet armors.
How does she keep up with all of
them? She's so imaginative.
Food Wars. Oh, God. He would be... His would be Azon. He'd be like, he made chicken soup from chicken stock.
How did this dude come up with this? It's like him at home sipping coffee when he was reading that chapter, just spitting all over his screen. He's like, how did no one think of this before? Did this dude win a Nobel Peace Prize for this chapter?
Okay.
My hero. Who are you liking that?
Taroki. You're like, he has fire and ice powers! Brilliant!
Yeah, he'd like fire ice guy.
Naruto, he would love Sasuke.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Toriko, he would love Coco.
I've never seen someone utilize poison so well.
He immunized himself to poison, and then he poisoned that guy.
Look at this fucking smart motherfucker over here, poisoning everybody.
World Trigger.
He would have liked Yuma at the start until he thought he got boring.
Until he started becoming more interesting. And now he likes Katori.
Yeah. He's like, oh, she's so cool. She's so smart.
She's so perfect. She's got such an interesting personality.
Oh, she's so developed. And not in a sexy way. Although, I couldn't imagine tits that big.
The joke I made like 6 years ago still lives on. Alright, so that's that question. Yeah. Thank you for that one. Ninja Straw Hat. Hello, Nick, at least 3 wrestling references an episode or we riot Fireler of Time. And Chris, please don't make me play that Bean Boozle game ever again, Roll OT. Oh,
so brutal.
Sent a lot of messages lately. Yep. Here's another one. Nick, one of my favorite videos you ever did was your reaction sauce video on training arcs, and I was wondering that if you were to update it, how would you sum up training arcs for the new series that you read? Black Clover, Fairy Tail, Food Wars, My Hero Academia, and World Trigger. Black Clover doesn't have training arcs, so I don't know.
Yeah. Why need training arcs when I already believe in
friendship.
Myself?
Friendship! they did have a training arc, I guess, for Noelle, but it was done in a montage. And that was it. Fairy Tail didn't have a training arc either. They copped it out. They were like, now we'll unlock your hidden potential. Like, with the
girl. Literally!
Food Wars, time to put these girls in sexy teacher outfits. Yeah. And that was that. My Hero Academia, the whole thing is a training arc.
Yeah.
World Trigger, the training arcs all really pretty much happen off-panel, and it's more just, this is how they're training.
Yeah, it's like a concurrent kind of thing with the narrative of, like, gotta train for this match, gotta train for that one.
Mm-hmm. It's really just, like, an explanation of what they're going to do, and then what they do happens off-panel. Because it's such a... That just kind of matches the whole tone, the whole aesthetic of the series, though. Everything is very thought out and not emotional in terms of the action. Chris, since it's the 30th anniversary of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I wanted to ask a JoJo question.
Dang.
If you could have one of the JoJos stand in your daily, everyday life and then give one of the main villains stands to another person, girlfriend, best friend, brother, Nick, anyone, which stands would it be? Why those? And who would you give a stand to? Remember, this is normal reality. There are no evil vampires or guys who have similar messages, powers. It's just normal everyday life. So you could have one of JoJo's stands, and you have to get someone else one of the villain's stands.
Yeah, so I'm assuming when he means a JoJo stand, he's referring to just the actual main character JoJo's, in which case I'd take Crazy Diamond, because that's the one I think I'd get the most use out of.
Which one is that?
That's the Josuke's one. It's the one that can heal things and fix and mend things back to their kind of original state.
Yeah, so who doesn't want to just be able to fix shit?
Yeah, and if someone's hurt or injured, I can heal them. I can't heal myself, but I've always been someone who's more interested in helping others, so works for me. And then when shit's broken around the house, I can just be like, Crazy Diamond! And it fucking punches my toilet, and then it repairs without a huge turd clogging it, and I'm like, done!
You would have... God, you'd be able to save so much goddamn money. You'd never have to update anything as it breaks down.
Yeah, owning a house would be simple. It would be so easy.
You would get the blue screen of death, and you would just punch your laptop, and it would be fixed.
My car starts, like, having issues, and I'm just like, fuck this, Crazy Diamond! And it punches the car in the face, and then fucking, I get a better car already.
That would be the single most convenient superpower to have ever, basically.
Yeah, it's real easy. And I gave... Because the thing with JoJo's villains is almost all their stands are broken as fuck and super dangerous. So I gave the villain power to Nick, but I gave you the world, which is the one that can stop time for like 10 seconds.
Now it'll be the real ruler of time.
Yes, but also it was like I don't trust Nick with the ability to like erase parts of time or the power to blow things up whenever he wanted. Or the power to go between dimensions and kill people, or the power to speed up time, creating a fucking, like, event horizon that branches off into alternate realities. I don't trust Nick with any of those powers. Stopping time's the safe one to go with.
Because, really, what is he gonna do with all that time, anyway?
Yeah, you don't have an entire, like, bucket of knives to hurl at me like Dio or anything like that.
I could go get a bucket of knives.
Yes, you could stop time for 10 seconds, get a bucket of knives, and come back. But I think by then I might be able to react.
Too lazy to plan that far ahead anyway. Yeah.
Instead, it'd be really convenient for you when you're just like, I'm going to punch this customer in the balls and then unfreeze time. And they'll be like, oh, my balls, why?
Alright, good stuff. Question 3. I've been watching some of the World Trigger anime. The short version is that it's not good. It reminds me a lot of the Toriko anime, where Toei did what they always do, throw very little money behind a project, yet expect big results. However, it did make me wonder if this might have also affected how popular Toriko and World Trigger are outside of Japan. The series are both incredibly popular in Japan, but are still very much regulated to the niche manga and anime market outside of the country. While other popular series like One Punch Man and Attack on Titan have taken off like fireworks. Do you think that the poor reception of Toriko and World Trigger's anime has possibly crippled any chance that they have to be more well-known outside of Japan? And if they could recover and gain more acclaim and recognizability, what do you suggest that they do to do so? I think that you are completely correct, honestly. I think that the quality and popularity of Toriko and World Trigger have greatly affected how popular their manga are. That's one of the reasons that I was so excited and pleased by the My Hero Academia anime and how good it looked, and then it was getting such a big budget, awesome looking opening, lots of marketing behind it, and it seems to have picked up very well with people who have seen it who weren't familiar with manga before. Similar to how, like you said, Attack on Titan, One Punch Man, gained attention because they catch your eye, they've got those awesome openings, great quality animation. So, you know, yeah, that's, I agree.
So I just, sent over what they consider the best part of the World Trigger anime, which is almost literally 20 seconds straight of, not Yotaro, Yon Nera, the spear guy, stabbing through Ranbien, and just alternating between, with the same fucking faces and animations.
Oh my god, you can see the money on the screen right there.
Yeah.
You can see all 25 cents of animation right there.
Yeah, no,
Jesus Christ, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's...
I think that it might have been extended a little bit, artificially. Jesus Christ, it's terrible.
It's still a shame. Yeah, it's a shame because... And I remember when people heard the World Trigger anime was ending, they were excited because they're like, good, like, that's stupid things ever. I was really bummed because, like, that's... It's probably not going to get a second shot.
Probably not.
And that, and, you know, like it or not... And anime is really, really useful for getting people interested in a series because manga is not nearly as big as anime, you know, especially in America where manga is like a subgenre in and of itself. People aren't going to see it. You know, if it's only a manga and the only anime it had wasn't very good, you know, that's even going to turn off people who may have heard it to be like, oh, that World Trigger? I saw that. It sucked. Like, the anime blew. It's like, that's a shame.
But yeah, I do... Because it just has to do with the fact that more people watch anime than read manga.
Yeah.
So if people's eyes get caught by an anime and they think that it's good-looking, they want to check it out, that influences them to spread the word or to purchase the manga themselves. And so it does better.
Indeed.
And the last question. An anticlimax of a question. Have you seen the One Punch Man anime?
I have not.
I have not either.
And it's really on the anticlimax you wanted.
All right.
Question from Campy. Questions first. From Campy. Dear those little men who live in my phone that talk about manga once-ish a week. As we all know, certain tropes consistently repeat themselves in fiction. Manga being no different, as several tropes unique to the medium. So, question one. What are some of your favorite tropes that appear in manga, and why?
I don't like trope questions.
Oh, I'll give you an answer then. I'm a big sucker for the heroes stand together in a line moment, or they stand together kind of moment. It's specific to manga. Because, you know, that's like the money shot in the Avengers trailers for both of them. Of like, look at our heroes in a circle. And Power Rangers does it all the time. But I get suckered in so easily by, like, the heroes standing together in a line, cool pose. Like, one of my favorite panels of One Piece is the shot of all the Straw Hats on Enies Lobby's roof staring across at Robin.
Everyone's crossing their arms. We're here to save the day. Meanwhile, Usopp is terrified about tonight and Sokka King.
Yeah, but because he has the mask on, he looks badass in that panel. So I love that a lot. What are your least favorite tropes that appear in manga, and why?
Same answer.
I don't have many manga specific ones. I think I've mentioned before. I hate any time a character, like, anything crazy happens in like the real world, and a character in the real world writes it off as like, oh, they must be filming a movie next to my house. Like, yeah, that's
so stupid.
Giant monsters crush through your neighbor's apartment complex, but. Yeah,
they
probably just...
These are really good effects.
They must just not have told anybody they were filming on my street. Or any camera crews around. Or police to keep me away from the danger. Three. In the woodworking manga, you two seem to be on again, off again writing. What tropes would you use, and what would you avoid? Well, we'd have to have... I feel we definitely would use the trope of, like, hard work versus natural talent. Like, there's some guy who spends all of his day fucking whittling the perfect birdhouse... And then, like, the douchey woodworker comes by and is just, like... He doesn't even look at the block of wood. He just, like, slaps it and it falls apart into, like, this, like, leaning tower of Pisa made out of wood. And it becomes, like, the focal point of the series. Is like, can Woody Woodson, McWooder, manage to overcome his eternal rival of, James Harrison? I couldn't think of a more interesting name.
George Washington Carver.
Oh, that's it!
And it's the actual George Washington.
Yeah. He's like, I made peanut butter.
I don't have time to be whittling away at this all day. I've got to come up with another use for peanuts.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were like, what are some things black people invented? And like one of the first things is like peanut butter. And they're like, all right, can we find eight others that aren't peanut butter related?
He didn't invent peanut butter.
I love that notion. Like, can we find inventions black people made that aren't peanut butter? Like, I don't know, that's just like very constant, just makes me laugh.
I bet you've got to put that qualifier on there.
Four. Finally, is all Q&A.
This is like my favorite question that we got this time through.
As all Q&A questions must end in something goofy, and in celebration of the upcoming release of Sun and Moon, the two of you have been tasked to create a Pokemon region. However, since Nintendo loves to both troll and pander to its fans, for each of the gym leaders, you have been directed to use a pastiche. I've never heard that. Pastiche of current manga protagonists. Which eight do you choose, and what types or themes would be used in their gyms?
Pastiche is a very transparent parody, basically.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, like, instead of Superman, you would have Perfect Man.
Super Dude.
Yeah, exactly. Splider-Man and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
I'm glad that they didn't have us say who would be the first through eighth gym leaders in order. So I just wrote down, and it also they clarified it has to be the protagonist of the current series. So.
I could not get a full eight. I got six, and I kind of had to cheat with that. But I will hear yours then.
The only one that I couldn't decide on was I couldn't decide what type Toriko would have.
Okay.
But for Asta, I put normal.
Okay.
Ichigo, I put dark. Natsu, fire, obviously. Soma, I put poison.
I had Soma's poison as well. It's awesome. A good one.
Yeah. For Raku, I put fairy. Because...
fairy tale.
No.
No, I mean, it's like a fairy tale kind of romance season. It makes sense, actually.
Yeah, right. You know, you got girls and stuff, and a lot of them have to do with infatuation effects.
Yeah.
Luffy, I put fighting. He's the one that ended up with it. And I thought to myself he would have a Hitmonlee with the extendable legs and stuff.
Yeah.
And Yuma, I put electric, because Yuma's based around speed and quick attacks. But I couldn't come up with anything for Toriko. I thought about maybe giving him rock, but I wasn't sure.
I have Natsu as fire as well, Luffy fighting. I have Ichigo as ghost, actually.
That makes sense.
I have Soma's poison. I have Deku as normal. But I think his gym would be specially made so every normal type would also have a subtype of something else. So a normal water, a normal ground, normal fighting, normal fire. Like everything would have a second type to it. Because he's all about quirkless, but someone who could still do good.
Actually, I'm going to look at this real quick. Hang on a second.
Okay. And then I have, and this is in the current Jump protagonist, this is where I cheated, but for my sixth gym, I have Ueki as the grass gym leader, the main character from Law of Ueki, the guy who could turn trash into trees as long as he could fit it between his hands. but I couldn't think of anything for Toriko. I took poison already, so I couldn't even try to fit Coco into that spot.
Let's see, normals with the subtype. There are some fairies.
There are a lot of flying. There's fairies.
Plenty of flying, of course. Girafarig is a psychic subtype.
There was a fire normal in the last gen.
Bibarel is a normal water. Megalopunny is a fighting. Is a normal fighting. Jesus Christ, that must suck when you come against a ghost. Deerling and Sazbuk are normal grass.
Oh. Yep.
Meliata goes between psychic and fighting. Diggersby, whatever the fuck that is.
It was the hideous rabbit that evolves from a super cute rabbit.
Apparently there is going to be a dragon that is also a normal type.
Oh, maybe in the new gen? I don't know. I know they announced the new dragon.
Drampa.
Yeah.
Oh god, that looked... It's... Oh my god, it's Falcor!
That's it. That's what everyone says.
Or Falcor. That was it, yeah. Yeah, and Pyro or Fire Normal. Heliolisk. Electric Normal.
Yeah, they have a good amount of those normal crossbreeds, so I feel like that would be his gimmick there.
Just think, Gen 1, it was just normal or normal flying, that was it.
Yeah. I kind of considered Yuma for psychic, because he can read other people's minds, essentially.
That's a good point.
But
yeah.
I couldn't pull the trigger on it. I couldn't pull the trigger. Nailed it. All right. Thank you, Campy, for your questions.
This is from Jack, officially unemployed, Lebrano. Dear Pop-Tart Prince and Mr. Needs More Honey Mustard. Just graduated.
Which one was which?
And Jack says he just graduated from college with a gaming art bachelor.
Congratulations.
So that's why he says he's unemployed. It's because they're attending college. So don't worry. Don't weep for him. There's just a quick thing about the thing, I guess. And, good luck, dude, out in the real world, so to speak.
Yes.
Three, hopefully, great questions for you two to discuss. Number one.
Question one, make a gym leader out of all Pokemon and manga characters. Like, damn it!
This is, which power from Bleach would you rather have? A Shinigami's Shikai and Bankai, an Arrancar's Resurrection, a Fullbringer's Fullbring? Or a Sternrider's Volstendig. It says that I have to say this in an incredibly racist German accent. Volstendig!
Oh, Volstendig!
Volstendig, oh, the Volstendig is so wonderful, oh, yeah. With either power, what would you name it? What would it do?
I I think I'd want a Shinigami Shikai and Bankai. There's not really much of a difference between them. They're all kind of like, Fullbringer is the one that's least impressive of those, although they have bullshit powers of their own, but everything else is like transform and have more of a bullshit power.
I feel like I would actually honestly want the Fullbring because it seems like it would have the most utility out of all of them.
Yeah, definitely. But what if you get something stupid like Muddy Boots?
That's a good point. Number one, the sequel. To Nick, is it...
That is a brilliant chapter for Bleach. I feel like that is a great idea.
All of Kubo just retroactively goes back and renames all of his chapters. Chapter one, subtitle something.
Yeah.
To Nick, is it easier to review recommendations of series that you've already read on Red Right to Left? It's actually harder, because I already have my preconceived notions of a series going into it. So, like, with the Pokemon one, it was a little bit different because we're doing it, you know, part by part, similar to JoJo. But, like, when we did, like, Madoka Magica, I already had my preconceived notions of it as I was rereading through it. And I feel like I went into that episode not treating the manga itself very... Basically, I didn't do a good job, I don't think. So, I like to actually go in blind on a series that we cover, or not having read the whole thing, at least. Mm-hmm. Unless we pick it up, you know, for a regular thing, in which case it doesn't really matter to me. Number one's Long Lost Brother. I'm aware that it is incredibly unlikely that Oda will not have any of the Straw Hats get together. With anyone. Sanji's fiance won't join the Straw Hats no matter how much the fandom wants that to happen, and Luffy has a better chance of marrying a literal pork chop, his one true love, than Boa Hancock no matter how much he wants it. That being said, out of all the pairings you've heard about from the One Piece community, non-Straw Hats included, which one makes the most or least sense to you?
I've always thought two within the Straw Hats make a lot of sense to me, which would be Usopp and Nami, who have had kind of small moments with one another, particularly in like their moments of recognizing they're like the weakest members of the crew. Like Nami had that, I can't remember if it was Nami who said it or if it was Usopp who said it, but after the time skip when they reunite, I think it was Nami who made like a point of mentioning like, ooh, Usopp's gotten a lot stronger. It was like kind of like a something you could easily put into like your fan fiction novel if you were writing one between them. I thought they'd work. And then Franky and Robin, who maybe wouldn't be a real couple, but they definitely feel like the work husband and wife, essentially. Like, just in the Straw Hat crew, that's kind of the relationship they share.
I fully agree with you in terms of just purely within the Straw Hats, because, like, Robin's, you know, older than the rest of them except for Franky, and...
Technically Brooke.
Right. Right, of course. Brooke's way older than all of them. And Nami is too much of a babysitter to the rest of them. Because, like, okay, Sanji, you know, thinks that Nami is hot. Brooke thinks that she likes to look at her panties and all that stuff. But Nami is horrifically annoyed by them. She's constantly having to slap Luffy around to keep him in line. And Zoro seems to be asexual, basically. So I really can't imagine her hooking up with any of them, but she has a nice little friendship with Usopp. They seem to be the most normal of the Straw Hats, and they seem like they might actually end up together. And Chopper doesn't make any goddamn sense, because he constantly looks like he's eight.
That's interesting said, though. The one completely outside the Straw Hats I could see would be Zoro and Kawina. If only because the only time I ever thought One Piece really kind of hit into romance in a realistic way, like a mutual romance, was with Zoro and Kuina in the past.
She's dead.
Not Kuina. Zoro and... Oh, what's her name? The girl who looks like Kuina. Tsukachi. Or... Fuck, what is her name? She works with Smoker.
Tashigi,
that's it. Sorry, Tashigi. Zoro and Tashigi is something I could realistically see happen.
Okay. I don't really agree, but okay.
I see some basis in it.
Alright.
Was this my question still?
Fuck.
What? Oh, no, it's my... Yeah, it's my question. Okay. There was more to that one.
It's from Brawla.
Do I have the right email?
No, no, wait. It's Greedo Prime. Okay. But they're greeting Brawla in it.
Ah, okay. Yes, from Greedo Prime. Hello, Chris and Nick. Sorry, no clever names this time. All right, next email. it is I, Greedo Prime, your self-proclaimed unofficial gay correspondent. I wanted to hear your opinion on some post-Naruto facts and the probable direction that Boruto may take.
It's a long explanation of, like, the Boruto movie. And basically it comes down to the origin of ninjutsu is aliens.
Do you think so, Nick? Do you think it's all aliens?
Wouldn't really shock me. But I do think it would be phenomenally stupid.
I mean, that's what everything turned out to be in Toriko. Like, all the gourmet demons and everything like that are all just aliens from another planet, essentially, so...
It's like magic, though.
Yeah, it's a cop-out, certainly. But...
How did this happen? It came from another world.
Ooh. Like, we already had kind of, like, escalating bullshit in Naruto, the series, when, like, Kaguya had to be involved. It couldn't just be a conflict between man. It had to be like, oh, an ancient demon was also part of this and responsible for all this chaos.
But she wasn't really an ancient demon. She was from an alien world.
Yeah, like, that's when you're like, oh, come on, guys. Let it die. So, I wouldn't be crazy excited. I don't know if there's anything Boruto can really honestly do that would make me that upset, though. Like, even if it destroyed the Toriko or the Naruto universe and was like, everything was aliens. Also, it turns out Shino was a secret betrayer of the ninja village all along, and Sasuke was actually a much nicer guy than everybody realized.
Shino just takes off his sunglasses and goes, Hail Hydra.
And he just has swastikas for eyeballs. And we're like, this is dark. Because none of us ever saw his eyes before. Yeah, I think it could do all that. I just don't think I'd care. Because it's like, it's a different series with a different writer, even though Kishimoto's overseen it. It's just very easy for myself to separate that from Naruto, the series.
Okay.
So, yeah. I don't think you're making extreme... yes, if he's being extreme in that thought. I don't think so. I just don't... I hope that's not the scenario, but I'm not going to be heartbroken if it is. It's going to be dumb, but... I'll be able to sleep at night still.
Alright. This next one is from Gelly Olsen. I was looking through a list of Bleach chapters, and I remembered slash noticed a bunch of negative chapters. The majority of them are in volumes 36 and 37, Turn Back the Pendulum, with single chapters in volumes 15, 20, and 32. Considering that there are theoretically at least 90 negative chapters not covered, do you think, minus one, Kuba has the whole thing planned out, that he specifically numbered those chapters as part of some kind of plan, minus two, he is planning to produce those 8 to 9 volumes worth of material, and minus three, after he finally finishes his final arc and hypothetically were to continue writing to cover those negative chapters, would Bleach outlast Boruto? Oh. You're reading too much into it.
Oh, hells no. Kubo's not smart and planning this all out. He's just pretentious and thinks it sounds cool to have negative chapters.
Well, negative chapters just indicates that the chapter took place negative years ago.
It's dumb to title a chapter negative 108 or whatever the first Turn Back to Pendulum was. Like, that's just dumb.
That's literally all it is that it gives you an idea of how long ago it was that negative chapter was. It has nothing to do with he is going to write another 90 negative chapters.
I seriously hate those chapters so much. Alright, next question here from Satellite says, if Osamu is the Eli Manning of World Trigger, would Kakazaki be the Tony Romo of World Trigger?
You're far too amused by this question.
Just the idea of us making all of the different various characters from World Trigger into their NFL analogs. Being like, who would Katori be? Who's like an NFL player who has a lot of potential but never lives up to it and just bitches too much? There's gotta be one.
Well, that almost sounds like Pardon me. That almost sounds like Cam Newton.
Yeah.
But Cam Newton's too successful.
But no, like year two or three Cam Newton, that's him to a T. When he was like bitching on the sidelines and blaming his team for losses, that's Cam Newton to a goddamn T.
When he went to that press conference and he just put his hoodie up and didn't say anything.
Yeah, and you know what? He still hasn't won the Super Bowl, so maybe we'll even get a chance where we see Katori redeem herself, start winning ranks, but then she loses in the advancement and goes fucking like, in the press conference with a hoodie over the head, like, oh no, man, stop asking me questions, I'm leaving.
So, then, I guess, there's gonna be someone who is, humble in defeat for Russell Wilson, then.
Arafune, I think, kind of fit that a little bit. Soft-spoken, but, like, somebody a lot of other people respect, but I think the outside perception of those people, like, the general public, like, as us the readers and as us the watchers of the NFL, a lot of people want to criticize him, though, being like, he's not that good or whatever, when you're like, he's actually really good, you just don't realize it.
Yeah. Just because he's not in the Legion of Boom, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I like that.
I like it because that was just, like, the intro line. He didn't ask us to find the NFL analogs to any of these characters.
No, the follow-up actually has to do with D&D.
Yeah, completely different. I'm just waiting for people to then send these questions in of, like, hey, who's the NFL analog to this World Trigger character? Anyway, if you were to play D&D with Osamu as the DM and four other B-rank captains from World Trigger, who would you choose to play with? So he gives us a list of them as they know him thus far, which would be Nidomiya, Kagayura, Azuma, Katori, Kuruma, Suwa, Arafune, Nasu, Kakizaki, and Chano.
You are overestimating my ability to remember all these people.
I remember a good portion of them. Nidomiya is the suit guy. Kagayura is the shark mouth guy. Katori is the bitch. Kuruma, I'm not 100% positive on.
I feel like Azuma would be a cool guy to play with.
Azuma would be cool. Azuma, I think, would be the best one, because usually older
players... He's open to ideas, too.
Open to ideas, and he's an experienced player, and I feel those are really helpful in campaigns. Because usually they're not too set on what has to happen. They're very easy to go with the flow, and those are the people who can make a game super enjoyable. Nidomiya would be the worst, because he'd be super bitchy and arrogant and shitty.
He'd be controlling everyone, he'd be telling them what to do.
Him and Katori would be the worst. They'd be the ones bitching at everything.
Katori would just be that person who just is playing on her phone the whole game, barely paying attention, combat happens.
Bitch at you, too. Like, right. Anything that she goes that she doesn't like, she'd stop to, like, bitch at
her. What do you mean I'm poisoned?
Yeah, it's such a stupid mechanic. Like, it's only stupid because it affected you. And that's why you think it's stupid. You poison everything 7 times around with your bullshit min-max character.
Yeah, she's got a min-max character, but it's got super obvious weaknesses that completely cripple it.
Oh, and she gets
bitches whenever they come up.
Oh, yeah. She's just like, why do you have an enemy that stops me from charging? It's like, because if you don't do it, you one-shot everything. This is unfair. Suwa, I think, would be another great one. He's like a guy who kind of just like sits back drinking beer. As long as he's cool with like D&D games, I think that'd be a fun guy to have. So just relax. And then, do I need two more? Kagayura. Very emotional, but I think in the right spot. He'd probably make, like, a very edgelord kind of character. Like, super dark and emo, but probably pretty cool. And then, let's get Nasu, because I think could work, yeah. She seems nice. All right. There we go. So, thank you, Satellite, who says, hashtag Sigumi was robbed 2016.
Aww. Next up, Supernova RX. Hello, Y, Blue Eyes Ultimate Dragon Ruler of Time, and Rolo Ojama Yellow Tea. You don't even know how big an insult that is.
Isn't that like the fat eyeball monster who walks around like a Speedo?
It's one of the ones that does that, yes. Actually, it's kind of fun. It's also funny because they're signature monsters for the rivals in the first two series. Yes, Manjome's signature monster was Ojama Yellow, amazingly. First, glad the flavor text of the May Q&A was started from one of my questions and made Nick laugh several times, but since half my questions were skipped, let me try this question thing again. First, to clarify the Soul Reaper and Quincy dating thing, I meant like a comedy setting, like Renji and Catnip dating and going out while, say, Rukia and Asken spied on them. kind
such of a monster. Weird, like...
What the hell is this?
I love Supernova RX. I feel like his questions have this thought process to them that he doesn't explain, he just lists it off. I'm like, why is it like... Why is it a Soul Reaper and, like, a Quincy that don't seem to have relations? Like, did Asket ever talk to Catnip? Why is he along for this journey?
Second, a while back I mentioned this weird nightmare, and now, what is your best weird dream? For me, it was going from a pinball machine to fighting Ursula in my house while I had Herculean strength, tore off a tentacle, and stabbed her with a fire poker.
I had that exact same dream. You know what? My answer is the exact same as yours.
I did answer my weirdest nightmare. I think all of my weird dreams are nightmares, though, because they make me wake up, and so I remember them, though.
Yeah, usually I end up dying in my weird dreams, so...
No. Third.
Fucking Annalisa not warning me about that serial killer.
Third. Would you rather have to eat chocolate Pop-Tarts and ketchup-covered chicken nuggets the rest of your life, or have to fight Team Rocket every day? Well, Ash seems to make do just fine fighting them every day. So,
I think I'd take the chocolate Pop-Tarts and ketchup-covered chicken nuggets. That is it, like... If that's the only thing I eat, I have to go with the Team Rocket thing, because that's just going to kill my diet, because there's no nutritional value in either anything involved in that. But if it's like you have to eat a chocolate Pop-Tart and chicken, like ketchup-covered chicken nuggets a day, like, I'll just go with that so I don't have to deal with the fucking constant annoyance that's Team Rocket digging a pit at the end of my driveway. Like, we got him! Like, I'm going to climb out of this and you're going to end up in this hole. You know it's going to happen.
Wile E. Coyote going on here. Fourth, if you could take an aspect of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga and anime, which two parts would you combine? The card games?
I think he means, like, if you could take Battle City and somehow put it in the Duelist Academy. Or something like that.
I'm not really sure how to answer that question, honestly. They share many elements.
Which is a shame, because I had no idea. I was just going to piggyback off your answer.
Mm. Last, would you rather be stuck in the world of World Trigger, but Osamu and Kitora never hook up, or that of Bleach, but it never ends?
Well, I think I could enjoy World Trigger even if they didn't hook up, because that's why I write the fan fiction, to satisfy my own urges. However, I think I'll take Bleach, but it never ends, because I would live forever then.
Good point. Good point.
All right.
Brawla again.
Yes. Greetings, Nick. Why do I suffer so much Kubo Ruler of Time? And Rolo T, with T stands for teaching children about sex of World Trigger fanfics.
Oh, God.
First, as you can imagine, not only do I write my own book, but I also read a lot of books, mostly fantasy, and the thing is, I see a certain pattern. Most protagonists are the underdog and have average looks, and most times they're brunette. Which I understand why, because people should identify with them and therefore root for them. It makes sense. Now, here's the thing. I've read so many of these stories, and I'm kind of sick of that archetype, and I have an interest to write another kind of character. Like, for example, and she requests, don't laugh, a big-breasted, powerful lady with a lot of pride.
Well, we're going to be talking about a manga like that tomorrow.
Yes. I like the idea to write a character who is just different than most protagonists, similar to Teppu, a manga with a villain as the protagonist. Do you have any suggestions for how to write such a character? And I don't mean the simple anti-hero archetype who is dark, gritty, and brooding. I mean more of the strong, arrogant ones who you couldn't call the underdog in a story.
Unless you actually make them the villain, you have to make them sympathetic in some way. Give your protagonist some means that gets the audience to root for them. It's okay to have a character who is confident in themselves. A lot of shonen characters are very confident in themselves as the protagonist. But they shouldn't be so arrogant that they are completely annoying. And if you're going to make them attractive, that is also fine. But they can't be flawless. Then you just get a Mary Sue, and that's not interesting. You can get away with more if you deliberately make your protagonist a villain. Because then they're the villain. And that's different. But if you're going to have the hero of your story not follow all the traditional aspects of heroes, that's fine. That makes them different and stand out. But the big rule is, why do I want to root for this person? Give me a reason to.
I think that a lot of that is a very good mythology to take. One game that came to mind when thinking about this is the game Tales of Vesperia, which was a 360 game. The main character in that, Yuri, is not an underdog really at all. You know, he's kind of like a city street rat, but he's very confident, very cool. Kind of like Aladdin, but more talented. And it was the characters around him who kind of played more of the underdog role as they all banded together to save the world kind of plot. And I think that worked well, because as the protagonist, he was still able to create really interesting stories. Like, it's one of the few times I've ever seen a character, like, the protagonist in a good-natured series, legitimately kill someone out of the pure desire to get their own vengeance despite justice. And it's kind of sad because it never really gets followed up on, but it was a really cool moment to be like, oh, usually the main character's like, fine, I'll forsake justice or revenge for the sake of justice. But this guy's like,
it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah, but this guy was like, no, I want this guy to die, and he kills him privately. It's fucking awesome. But a character like that in that situation is not an underdog, but because he's surrounded with characters who are more traditionally sympathetic in those ways, it's able to work around the idea that you don't like lose interest in this story because you're interested in the group at large as opposed to solely investing just the main character in their struggle. So I think that's something you can go with. Ultimately, though, I think if you just write the main character in an interesting way, in a way that's compelling, you can make any kind of character the lead, generally. Just comes to making things interesting, writing in a dynamic way, and posing challenges against them that give you a reason to want to root for them, as Nick said. So, go with that. Second question is about My Hero Academia. It is a little more silly. The charm of My Hero Academia is that it actually feels like an American comic made by a Japanese point of view, with the example of being All Might as Japanese Superman. Now, I'm curious. If you want to see more Japanese versions of famous and popular comic characters like Doctor Doom, Spider-Man, or somebody else?
I don't really care to see that, honestly. I've seen too many of them.
I think...
Like, the whole thing with, like, you know, because Marvel did the whole, this is the manga version with manga version of the characters and stuff like that. Whatever. And we all know how Japanese Spider-Man turn now. Either they're emo gits, or they have giant mechas for some reason.
I don't know if there's too many I specifically want to. Especially, like, after we got this last chapter, we kind of saw that there are their archetypes that I was thinking, oh, we don't really have a Batman, until it's like, oh, Tokoyami's Batman. He's just the whiny emo kid of the group, basically. So they kind of have that there.
This latest chapter in Tokoyami.
That is, like, oh my god, it was great. But I don't know, like, because Captain America is almost kind of like All Might in his way. I don't know if there are any others that really, maybe Hulk. But then again, that's also Tokoyami, really. Character who's afraid of their own strength and loses control. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know if there's anyone necessarily that I want to see over there. And I think the ones that we don't have are ones I'm thankful that my hero doesn't have, like a Franklin Richards. So you're like, oh, okay, some stupid little kid who has all the powers of the universe. Sweet. This won't be boring.
Okay. I think that we'll do one more read by each of us, because okay. I gotta start getting ready to go. So this one is not signed. Dear Christ Almighty, did we really need another Urza fanservice moment? And Nick, why isn't Bleach over yet? I know both of you don't watch a lot of anime, but if you could pick the soundtrack of a series and use that as the soundtrack of your life, which series would you pick? Personally, I would go for My Hero Academia, because holy crap. That is an interesting question.
I would have probably before this, like, you know, 5 months ago, said One Piece, because it's one of the few animes I've listened to all the way through, or one of the few animes I've watched a good chunk of, and I've listened to a lot of the music from it. But I think recently I really loved the music from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4, and I think I dig that a lot, because it's got, like, just a cool, funky beat, it's exciting, but it's also got that kind of, like, dramatic, appropriate music for when the time comes. If I could make any accomplishment in life and have it immediately be followed with the Josuke theme, I'd be so happy. Like, any time I get one up on somebody, I'm like, actually, I did send an email. And I just stand there, like, stare there, put, like, looking at them, like, confidently, like, I got you. But, like, stop looking at me, weirdo. But I'd be perfect.
I might go with Fairy Tales, honestly.
Fairy Tales is a really good soundtrack.
Just awesome, you know, violin.
That's the soundtrack to somebody's life who climbs mountains as a hobby because they fight bears for a living. You need to be an epic lifestyle. You can't be sitting at home playing video games with that, because you're definitely going to start feeling like, oh, we need something. I need to live up to this music a little bit more.
It just matches my musical taste, though.
You know, yeah.
Very, very rock-heavy kind of soundtrack. There are probably ones that I'm sure would match my life better, but just in terms of the music that I listen to. Like, out of the various soundtracks for anime that I regularly listen to, that's one of my favorite to listen to, just when I'm driving.
I can see that.
It's
a good one.
And, okay, our last one is multi-parts, so we'll still be here for a little while.
Holy shit! Alright, okay, some of these are suggestions.
Yeah. Question it's from Tropical.
Hello, on this July? I don't know. Probably going to be several when you guys read this on the Q&A. Well, we nailed it right on time. How's it going? I spaced out my email from the last one in April, so this one should be a month later. I'm positive you guys are sick of reading my questions all the time, so I figured to spice things up a little and make this email food suggested, or food themed. First question. You guys have previously mentioned that there is a possibility of a Food Wars themed special video episode sometime in the past. So I was wondering if you guys are willing to listen to recipe suggestions or any limitations on what you're willing to eat or experiment on cooking in it.
I'm not going to eat chocolate. Fuck you.
I think we'd be able to answer this closer once we actually have that cemented as something we're going to do and planned out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's far too hypothetical to take anything.
We've got a lot more plans that are going to take precedence over that.
But it's something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. In case you guys read this email close to Thanksgiving, what the fuck? You wrote July. When did you think we were going to get to this? I was wondering whether it is possible to make a pizza or burger that is suitably Thanksgiving-themed. I had heard from Americans I met that since there are types of pizza, like pineapple, high Hawaiian pizza where you put pineapples on it, would cranberries work on top of a hypothetical Thanksgiving pizza? And the meat could be turkey, pulled, cured, smoked, and it would fit in as well as chicken, beef, and pork, right?
I guess you could do that.
Well, the turkey probably could work, and that wouldn't be so bad. I don't like cranberries, period. I've never eaten cranberries, and if I did, I didn't like it. I just never cared for the smell or the little I have tasted of them. So I wouldn't want it as a topping. I don't know about that. I'll tell you this. There's I want to call it a food establishment. It's a gas station that makes food, but Wawa is a chain gas station / to-go place. And they have a sandwich at Thanksgiving time they call the Gobbler, which is just turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing, and then gravy in like a sandwich form, in like a sub. And those are amazing. I don't know if you could make one of those into a pizza, though. Unless you bastardize the pizza of it. Like, you're like, alright, it'll be gravy instead of sauce, and mashed potatoes instead of cheese. Like, that sort of thing, maybe.
I'm sure you could find something on YouTube of someone making a super weird pizza or a burger.
Burger actually be easy, because they're turkey burgers.
Oh, yeah.
And putting mashed potatoes on that and, like, some gravy. Like, that's actually pretty simple.
Yeah, that's just a different way of putting potato on it, sure.
Yeah. So I could definitely see that. Yeah. Chris, is it possible to make the special stream you did on Twitch when you came out as skinny available to download? I don't know why I like that term, came out as skinny. Like, I was hiding it, like, for years in the closet. Guys, like, no one must know.
Got a very important announcement to make for you guys. I've been going through some changes.
Yeah, I need everybody to know. You must remember
I'm so happy that you guys are still supporting me, even though I'm not fat anymore.
Just call me Skinny Chris for now on.
Oh, man.
If you call me Fat Chris, I'll be okay with it, but just know I'm Skinny Chris now.
Oh, Oh man, the hardships all those trans thin people have had to endure over the years.
I would not be shocked if somewhere out there there is a real movement for trans thin people. It would not shock me in the slightest. I found that stream really helpful and it's inspirational. I'd love to keep a copy of it. Unfortunately, I didn't make a highlight of it on Twitch. And I mean, I guess if you search through old broadcasts, you could hypothetically find it.
I don't think Twitch keeps that shit.
I thought they did. I know Hitbox deletes it after 2 weeks, but I thought Twitch just kept old broadcast period.
I don't know. I think Twitch has always been kind of hard to predict with that stuff.
It might only be available really to like partners, so I don't know. But anyways, I don't have it for myself, unfortunately. I may do something like it. Excuse me. I may do something like that again at some point. Part of the reason I didn't highlight it is because I wasn't completely happy with the way it came out. So, I may do something more professionally made at some point. And then I'll do that to go by. 4. Nick, what exactly wouldn't work as a Pop-Tart filling? We already know bald eagles work, but would Floridian alligators step up to the challenge?
Just Florida alligators.
I don't know how you would get... You'd have enough Pop-Tarts to fill, like, the Fort Knox if you killed that one giant alligator that was walking over on that golf course.
You guys are... All you people who don't live in Florida are like, oh my god, the alligators!
They're the only place that must have them!
Oh, they're gigantic! No, they're not.
Well, that one on the golf course was ridiculous.
Some of them can be big, sure. I've seen baby alligators on a golf course, actually. There's a mini golf place near where I live where they have a bunch of baby gators that you can just look at and feed them food.
Did you see that one on the golf course I'm talking about, though?
I don't know.
A lot of people are like, it's super fake, but then there's other shots, I guess, from different angles. It legitimately looks like a dinosaur. I mean, alligator golf course, Florida. I'm going to find you this video. I'm going to shoot it over to you.
Oh, okay. I see it. Yeah. That's a big gator. Sure.
Yeah, that thing's fucking enormous. That's all terrifying.
Right. Well, gators live in Florida. Literally, when I met Nicole, my girlfriend's family, when she had this one aunt who, her first thing that she said to me after, you know, hello was, you're from Florida, right? Yeah. So, alligators live there, right? So weird. Anyway, in terms of the Pop-Tart question, there must be some sort of reference to a past episode I'm forgetting with the bald eagle Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, we did it, I think, last episode that he asked if we could eat a bald eagle-flavored Pop-Tart. Yeah, I think he asked me if I'd eat one. It was like part of my Captain America-themed question set, I believe.
Well, the thing is, like, any filling for, like, meat in a Pop-Tart would probably be disgusting as hell.
I mean, especially if it couldn't have any frosting on, because that would be god-awful. If you didn't have that, though, it's just like a texture. It'd
be a meat pie.
Well, yeah. it would be a Hot Pocket, essentially, but with a shittier crust, because it's a crust that doesn't really work with meat.
Uh-huh.
And Hot Pockets are gross already, so... Like, unless you're taking, like, Kobe steak and putting it into the Pop-Tart, in which case I'm like, why did you ruin this Kobe steak?
Dude... The thin strip of meat you stuck in this must have cost $500.
He's like, yes, it did. But I proved a point.
We can't make a Kobe steak Pop-Tart.
We can't sell it. It's mathematically disastrous.
Oh, God.
And question 5. In the spirit of Bambino's cooking, would you guys be willing to experiment with cooking desserts? I mean, cheesecakes and the like, of course. And what sort of fruit would go with each of your cheesecake decorations? I'm sure one of you is creative enough to think of something other than strawberry, passion fruits, mangoes, durians, star fruits, sugar apples, kiwis, persimmon berries, dates, rambutans even!
I like how to emphasize the exclamation points from the previous one. You just pause before the next one.
I will say right off the bat, I already am a pretty good baker. I actually bake as a hobby from time to time. My mom taught me when I was young, so I actually kept up with that. And though I don't consider myself a great cook, I do consider myself a halfway decent baker.
Okay, cool.
So, I don't think I've made a whole lot of cheesecakes before. Cheesecakes was never something my mom really made, so I don't really have much of a desire to have them, but I could probably make something up like that. My mom actually used to make fruit pizzas a lot, which were like, it was like a pizza crust bottom, like a regular pizza crust, but then it would be like kiwis, blueberries, peaches, strawberries, basically like circled around the pizza with like a, what kind of glaze was it? I hated fruit, so I didn't eat it as a lot as a kid, but a lot of people loved it. But and then I think it had like a cheese, like a cream cheese kind of bottom to it, like for sauce. And a lot of people loved the shit out of that. I could probably make that without too much difficulty.
I think that some sort of apple on a cheesecake would probably work pretty well.
Yeah.
It's difficult because it comes down to the texture, you know? You can't just have just fucking an apple, you know, chop it up and slap it on there. But if you, you know, maybe cooked it, baked it, I don't know. It would have to be, you know, a bit crispy, but still soft enough that it doesn't disrupt when you bite into the cheesecake.
Yeah. But I think
I would definitely love to learn how to make a cheesecake. I do bake some. I make an awesome banana bread.
Oh, there we go. So we're both pretty decent bakers.
Yeah.
I think passion fruit could potentially even work for one of those straw cheesecakes. But I think most of the reason I say it is because I remember trying a passion fruit drink once. Do you remember Snapple briefly? They might still have it. But they had the Elements bottles, which were like called like rain and sun, and like a cool symbol on the front. There was one that was passion fruit flavored, which I drank just because I wanted to. I don't know why. I guess this is what you do when you don't have money as a kid. You're like, I'm gonna collect these bottles and display them in my room. Like, I was gonna like show people it one day, like, check out my collection of Snapple Elements bottles. But I remember,
look, there's trivia on them.
Yeah, it's pretty sharp. Did you know that? Oh, this is a fact that we've proven wrong since then. Alright, well, look at the next one. That's a little racist. Alright, well, don't look at this!
What the fuck, Snapple? What the hell?
Snapple, it is not appropriate to still call them moon crickets. That is not cool. They screwed it back to them. I don't know, where was I? Getting so off topic with this tangent.
Snapple!
Now I can only
think for Snapple!
That's right. It wasn't that good, but I think it worked in a cheesecake. I started thinking of all the different element fucking drinks, and I was like, what's my favorite? And then I started thinking of Squeeze-Its, and I was like, do they still make Squeeze-Its?
Before speaking of flavors of drink that we don't like, dragon fruit vitamin water is disgusting.
I don't, like, is dragon fruit even, like, a real thing in and of itself?
Okay. It is.
Nah, I've never had dragon fruit, but it doesn't sound very good.
It leaves an awful aftertaste.
Yeah. Gross.
Anyway, on that note.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Q&A episode for July 2016, Weekly Manga Recap. If you want us to answer a question, just keep on sending them in. Send them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. And, Chris, did we want to make our announcement then?
Yeah, I think we could do it now. So, we are going to be doing Blogist next month. Name's still pending, though I'm sure you're Blogist.
I mean, you can't come up with a worse name, I think. But it's because it's so bad that we're sticking with it.
Yeah, I think it's because it works so bad and being awful. For Blogist, we're going to be, of course, we're going to be a Q&A that month, but I think what we're going to do is exclusively, because it's the month that Bleach will be ending, we'll take all of your Bleach questions. Any and all Bleach questions you have, shoot them over to us, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Make sure you mention that there are Bleach questions within it, and we'll do specifically Bleach questions on it. We'll pull any questions that people have sent in already that are Bleach-themed or have Bleach, you know, within that, and we'll kind of gather them together, and we'll basically make it a Bleach-themed Q&A for that month. And then we'll go back and get any questions we missed afterwards when we do the September one. So, go for that.
Okay.
All right. Well, that is going to do it.
Yeah, thank you to our Patreon supporters who make bonus content like this possible. You can check us out on patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. You can check out our regular episodes on YouTube, on iTunes, and on podbean.com/weeklymangarecap.
Yes, sir.
We can buy recap.podbean.com, actually. I'm not sure if it, that if the other will forward to us.
Yeah, weeklymindrecap.poppy.com will get you there.
Yeah, so that's it. Yeah.
That's it. All right. Thank you guys for watching. We'll catch you next time.